Now, the series that we're in right now that we're wrapping up today, Crazy Like Us, is really a series where we have contrasted the idea of giving, which all of you do, and the idea of being generous. The idea of giving and the idea of being generous. All of you give, everybody gives, everybody in America, everybody in the West understands the importance of giving. What sometimes we don't understand and what we miss is the idea of generosity. And giving and being generous are two very different things. So this entire series is really about how to be generous, which is a little bit insulting because to say I'm going to teach you how to be generous assumes that you don't know how to be generous. And I don't know if that's the case or not, but here's what we do know. We do know that most Americans do not know how to be generous. They know how to give. They know how to respond to an ask or even sometimes a need, but they don't understand a life built around generosity. So instead of assuming that all of you know how to do that, I decided we'd take a few weeks and talk about how to be generous. This is not a do thing. This isn't to learn how to give. This is a be thing. This is learn how to be generous because again, everybody gives something to someone somewhere. And oftentimes that actually masks the reality that even though we know how to give, we don't know how to be generous. Because as we've said throughout this series, generosity is more than just random acts of giving. Generosity is more than just random acts of giving. The truth is, and you know this, and because we have a relationship, those of us who, if you attend our church on a regular basis, people who are persuasive or people with one of these strapped to their face or people that hold one of these right in front of you, there are persuasive people that can talk us into giving, sell us on giving, and you get invited to fundraisers or you show up at your school or they're out there collecting money for something, and enough sad pictures and persuasive people, enough guilt, enough inspiration, enough motivation, everybody gives. But generous people, here's the difference. Generous people never have to be sold. Generous people don't have to be inspired. Generous people don't have to be convinced. And generous people don't give according to guilt. Generous people have a plan. Generous people have a plan. Now, at the very beginning of this series, I made you a promise, and I want to give you the promise one more time. And then today is going to be very, very, very practical as we talk about how to develop a generous lifestyle. And the promise of generosity is this, that you, when you become generous, you will give more, you will save more, and you will consume less. And we talked about the consumption thing last week. But Jesus even makes a better promise. This is what Jesus promised. Jesus said that people who orient their lives around generosity, not just people who give randomly, people who build and organize and reorient their lives around generosity, which is what we're going to talk about today, are actually happier. They're actually happier. So you can do this or you can do this. And last week we talked about this, that most people in the United States and Canada and most Westerners, we worry about money. Am I going to have enough to retire on? My kids go to college. Am I going to be able to own a home? Am I going to afford to get married? We worry. And then we do the craziest thing imaginable. We spend everything we make or we spend more than we make. And then we have debt. And then we don't have any margin. And then we have something to worry about. And we get so worried, the only way to relieve our stress is to go to the mall. And so we go to the mall to relieve our worry, and we spend everything or more than we make. We carry debt, and we don't have any margin, and then we worry, and round and round and round we go, and then we go to the car dealership to kind of get, you know, work it off, and then the boat dealership and the boat show, and we'll go on and on and on. Everybody kind of has their thing. So consequently, we worry about future consumption. We consume more than we can afford. We carry consumer debt and we don't have any margin for future consumption. Then we worry about future consumption around and around we go. And we convince ourselves, we talked about this last week, we convince ourselves that we have a money problem. And 95% of us who worry about money do not have a money problem. What we have are three different problems. We have a self-control problem, we have a contentment problem, we have a discipline problem. And if you're a Jesus follower, and if you're not a Jesus follower, you don't have to take this seriously. This is just for people who take Jesus seriously. Jesus would say, you have a spiritual problem. Because if you are worried, it's because you have placed your trust in riches rather than in him who richly provides. So this is absolutely crazy. It's crazy the way we view money. It's crazy that we become really people who just see ourselves as owners and consumers. Jesus says there is a very different way to live. And it's the way of generosity, where you wrap your entire financial life and you begin to view the world through a different lens, the lens of generosity. Because generous people, and this is where we left off last week, generous people do not assume it's theirs to consume. This is the shift in thinking that makes all the difference in the world. Generous people do not assume it's theirs to consume. They have rejected the assumption consumption. Most people think, if it comes to me, it must be for me. Jesus taught, no, if it comes to you, it may not be for you. And if you assume it is for you, you will live your entire life like an owner and a consumer. And Jesus would say, you are better than that. And I did not design you for that, because ownership is a myth. And living as a consumer always leads to the same place. You are always discontent. No matter how new and shiny it is today, there's a newer and a shinier one waiting for you tomorrow. Living like a consumer, living with the assumption it's all for your consumption, no matter how much money you make, no matter how much you have, you will always be on the brink of discontentment, which drives the cycle round and round and round. Now, you break the insanity cycle. You break this insanity cycle by reordering and reprioritizing your finances. You break this cycle, and you break out of this cycle not by making more money. Because as we said last week, if you got a 10% raise, you would just do this with more money. 20%, 30%, no matter how much money you make, unless you suddenly had a windfall, which would wreck you. We know that, you know, from everybody who wins lots and lots of money or suddenly comes into lots and lots of money. But the only way off of this for the mere mortal, for most of us, is to rethink your finances. And generosity, I'm just telling you, generosity is the off-ramp. You reprioritize and you reorder around generosity rather than consumption. And it's this very simple thing. It's really taking the thing that is usually last on our list and moving it to the top of the list. So let me show you how that works. And to do that, we're going to go back to our definition that we gave you the first week and last week. So here's our working definition of generous. I made this up. You can come up with your own. It's clunky. No one will ever remember this, but I did it on purpose because these are some really, really important words that I want to talk through, then tell you a story, and then we'll wrap this series up. Here's our definition for generosity or generous. The premeditated, calculated, designated emancipation of personal financial assets. I kind of like it. The premeditated, we're talking about that one. Calculated, we're going to talk about that one. Designated, we're going to talk about that one. Emancipation, you're going to set it free. Because generous people understand, just because it comes to me doesn't mean it's for me. That's how generous people live. So let's start with this word right here, premeditated. In order to be generous, you have to have a plan. Generosity requires a plan. Let's read this together. Generosity requires a plan. With only a little bit more emphasis, okay? Browns Bridge, I want to hear you. Ready? Generosity requires a plan. I know what some of you say, I'm not a planner. Now, my wife's a planner. You know, she's got a plan, drives me crazy. My husband's a planner. He's like, always want me to sit down and look at his plan. I'm like, I don't want to, you know, just give me allowance, you know, or just, you know, just let me have my money. Or just, so let me just say to all the non-planners, okay? Look up here. This is very important. You have a plan. You just don't know it. See, this is how I know this. You have financial habits. If you have financial habits, you have a plan. You've just never written it down. You don't know it. In other words, somebody could follow you around, look at all your financial habits, put them in order and say, did you know this is your plan? And you're like, well, that is what I do. That's right. Everybody has a plan. Most of you, I love you, have a bad plan. If you do not know what your plan is, it is probably a bad plan, because when have you ever drifted in a good direction? You plan toward what's good, you drift toward what's bad. If you do not have a plan, things probably aren't as good as you may think they are financially. You have financial habits. Those financial habits are your plan. You are working a plan. You just haven't written it down. And let me tell you what your plan is if you've never written it down. If you are somebody who lives with the assumption that it's for your consumption, here is your plan. Consume it, save if I can, give what's left over. That's your plan. Consume pretty much everything that comes my way. Save if I can. And the best way for most of you to save is for you to never see it. How many of you have said that? If I never see it, I won't spend it. Let's just pause and think about that. If I don't see it, I won't spend it. Okay, that is not a compliment to you. If I don't see it, it's so good. If I don't see it, I don't spend it. Here's what that means. It means you lack self-control, and it means you lack discipline. Having your employer take it out and save it for you does nothing for you but make sure you don't spend everything that comes your way, which means you can live under the assumption of consumption. You can live with the assumption consumption and still accidentally save money because you never see it. So your plan, even if you've got a, you know, you're fortunate enough or work hard enough, you work for a company that saves money for you, you still live with this. Your plan is consume everything, try to save some, and give what's left over. It makes you what I call a 3S giver. Spontaneous, sporadic, and sparing. You know, if somebody guilts me enough, or I'm inspired, or I go to a fundraiser, the church is doing Be Rich, and it's $39.95, I know I can do that. Spontaneous, sporadic, kind of here, there, and sparing. Boy, I wish I could give more. Boy, I really wish I could give more, because there's no plan. Generous people have a plan, and they know what their plan is. Now, let me tell you something I love. The other day, actually, the week before we started the series, our guy in accounting said, "Hey, Andy, I want to show you something." And he brought me a check. Now, they don't bring me checks. I don't look to see how much people give. I would just be mad all the time, okay? So, I'm just kidding. I might be mad all the time. Anyway, I don't want to know. But he brought me a check. And I'm going to show you a picture of this check, because when I saw this, I'm like, I love that guy. Here's the check, okay? Get ready. Might be yours. Oops, not. North Point Community Church, $20 printed on the check. I have a plan. I have a plan. I love this guy. Okay. This is somebody from Canton who understands, you know what? Somewhere along the way, it dawned on him, you know what? If I'm going to be generous, I can't just sort of give when they ask and give when I have extra and give when I have leftover. I need a plan. And so in order to remind himself, I'm guessing I haven't contacted him. James, I should have let you know I was going to show your check in church. Sorry. I hope you're excited. Anyway, I just thought this is somebody who gets it. I have a plan. So you need to have a plan. If you're going to be generous, you've got to come up with a plan. There it is. A plan. Okay. Even if you're not a planner, you got to have a plan. You have a plan. You just don't know what it is. You need to know what it is. You need to work the plan. So that's the premeditated part. Premeditated, calculated, calculated. Calculated means you need to decide ahead of time how much. Generosity requires a specific amount, or generosity requires a percentage. You need to know ahead of time, how much am I going to give? And what percentage? And percentage is better. Percentage is better because as you make more, you give more. Percentage is better because as you make more, you give more. And let me tell you what has freaked some of you out, okay? You see, if I said, hey, would you give, if you make $100, if you have given $10, not a big deal. If you have $1,000, give $100, hey, $100, you know? But once the zeros start adding up, people freak out. It's like, oh my gosh, it's just so much money. No, it's a percentage. Generous people give percentages. That's how generous people think, because generous people want to give more. And as their income goes up, they decide to give more. And the best way to do that is by picking a percentage, not spontaneous, not sporadic, not sparing. Percentage is best. And here's what generous people do. Here's what I'm going to challenge you to do. Generous people give it before they consume it. See, the key to generosity isn't just giving more. The key to generosity isn't just having a plan. The key to generosity is reordering or reprioritizing your finances so that what was last, if I have any, I'll give it, goes first. You give first and you save second, and then you live on the rest. You flip the whole thing upside down. And that makes you a 3P. Instead of a 3S giver, you become the 3P giver. You're given a percentage. It's a priority. That means you give it first. We're going to talk about that in just a minute, how to do that. You give it first. I'm going to pick a percentage beforehand. When I get paid, when I get my bonus, when I get my tips, when I get my, you know, whatever, I'm going to give it first. It's a priority. And then progressive. And here's what I mean by that. That even if you have to take a baby step, you decide, you know what, I want to be generous, but it scares me. So I'm going to start with 2%, or I'm going to start with 5%, or I'm going to start with 7%. I think 7's 3 and 5 are Bible numbers, so we'll go 40 is 2. But okay, we'll go with 3 or 7, you know. That over time, you bump up your percentage. So you become generous by choosing a percentage, giving it first. You put it at the top of the list rather than the bottom. And then over time, you increase it. So that's the next step. You got yourself a plan, and then you're going to decide how much and how often. And then this is the fun part. You've been waiting for the fun part, right? This is what puts the fun in funding. Generous people, it's calculated, it's premeditated, it's calculated, and it's designated. That means you choose ahead of time where it's going. This is the reason some of you don't like to give is because people are always asking you for money, asking you for money, asking you for money. Generous people don't feel guilty saying no, because generous people have already decided. Now, here's what Jesus said. So this is, I'm going to tell you where to give your money, okay? This is what Jesus said. I love this. He said, where your treasure is, you've heard this before, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Now, this is a fascinating thing. Jesus, you should read again. If you don't believe the whole Bible, fine. If you're not sure about who Jesus was, you should at least read what Jesus said, okay? If you read the paper, you should at least read what Jesus said, okay? If you read anything, you should at least consider. So here's one of those brilliant insights Jesus had, that where your treasure is, your heart is, which means wherever you're sending your money, your heart, part of your heart is there. It also means that if you would like to change where your heart is, change the direction of your money. It works both ways. So this is how you put the fun in funding. This is how you bring a sense of feeling to your finances. And this is how to connect your money and your heart. You pre-decide where you're going to give. And then when everybody comes after you for money for the rest of your life, you can feel good about saying no because you're generous. I mean, you can do random acts of generosity. You can do random acts of giving. You should. I do all the time. But what makes you generous is that you have pre-decided, you have a plan, you picked a percentage, you're giving it first, and you've decided ahead of time where you're going to give it. One way of thinking about it is this. Saving is how you say yes to you and your future, but generosity is how you say yes to what is important to you. And you know what? You've all been in this situation. We all have. Where you become aware of something that really captures your heart and you think, oh, I wish I could do more. And the reason you can't do more is because you did not plan to do more. It's your fault. It's not a money problem. It's a self-control problem, a discipline problem, and a debt problem. But you're about to become a generous person. You're going to solve all of that. So here's how to choose where to give. Here's how to choose your designation. Okay? Two things. You give from a grateful heart and you give from a broken heart. This is how you choose. You give from a grateful heart and you give from a broken heart. Jesus says your heart and your money, your heart and your money. So you give from a grateful heart and you give from a broken heart. In other words, what are you grateful for? What are you broken over? What are you grateful for? What are you broken over? What are you grateful for? You should decide ahead of time. I'm going to fund the thing or the things that I'm grateful for. And you should decide ahead of time. I'm going to fund that organization or that thing that addresses an issue or a need that breaks my heart. So you got a plan. You're going to pick a percentage. You're going to give it first, not last. And you're going to decide ahead of time where it's going. This is why. Anybody who loves their local church should give to their local church. And if you don't love your local church, go find one that you love so much because you're so grateful for it. When you get in the car with your kids wake you up and want to go to church. I mean, if you love your local church, you should give to your local church because you're grateful for your local church. But let me take it a step further. If you have kids in college, now this is miraculous. If you have kids in college and they leave home, and they move to a different city and they get plugged into a local church. Okay, that's miraculous. You should give to that local church. Now, why? Because you're grateful. Oh my gosh, my kids actually are going to church in college. I've never been to that church. Whatever they got going on, I am so grateful. If you're a parent of a college student or a graduate student who found a local church and you know your kids are, you know, you're living off you still and they're, you know, making minimum wage somewhere while they're working through college. Every once in a while, you should put in your plan to support that local church. Why? Because you're grateful. You have a grateful heart for what they're doing. But in addition to your local church, you should pick something that's a cause that you're all about, a charity that creates emotion in you, a group that's doing something in the world. It may be something that's focused on a specific country, a specific neighborhood, a specific need. You need to find an organization outside of your local church that addresses something that breaks your heart. And you know, this is one of the reasons I love Be Rich. And Be Rich, we are trying to get you to get involved with some of the local charities. And we hope that when you get involved with some of the local charities and you get sort of emotionally, you know, engaged in what they're doing, that you would give to them. Now, Sometimes when I tell pastors about be rich, they say, I mean, you know, they look around and make sure nobody's listening, and they say, but aren't you afraid that the people in your church will give to those organizations rather than your church? And I laugh and say, I'm not afraid. That's the goal. That's what we're trying to do. Because what I'm not trying to get more money. I want to create a culture of generosity. And generosity, you don't have to be afraid of what generous people are going to do with their money. If every American would become generous like we're talking about, if the people in our local congregations became generous like we're talking about, there is plenty of money to get it all done, and the church doesn't need to worry. But as long as we fool ourselves into thinking we're generous because of random acts of giving, then we're in trouble. But generous people, they give to the things they're grateful for, with a grateful heart, and they give to things that have broken their heart. Again, generous people never feel guilty about saying no because they've already said yes. Generous people never feel guilty about saying no. No, I'm not going to give to that. No, I'm not going to come to your fundraiser. No, I'm not going to do that. Oh, are you not generous? No, I am generous. I've already said yes. I've already picked a percentage. I give it first, and I know where it's going, and I'm all for random acts of generosity. And, you know, I may come and see your deal, and yeah, I'll read your brochure, and, you know, I'm open. But don't accuse me of not being generous. I can say no because I've already said yes. Any questions? No. Okay. Now I'm going to address something that's really kind of a narrow slice of this that I think is very, very important. When you read the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the story of Jesus, Jesus always talks about giving to the poor. And the reason that Jesus talked about giving to the poor is because the church had not started yet. Okay, but the epicenter of religious life for Jesus and for ancient Jews was the temple. And the temple had a really cool thing. They had a temple tax. So they didn't take an offering at the temple. All the Jews were taxed, and they paid a tax that went to the temple. In fact, this is really kind of an interesting idea. All over the world in ancient times, Jews, no matter where they lived, no matter how far away from the temple they lived, they actually sent their money to Jerusalem to support the temple, which is really cool. In fact, it was so much money in certain Roman provinces at different times in history, the Roman provinces tried to pass a law against Jews paying the temple tax because they sent so much money out of the community to Jerusalem to support the temple. So it was a lot of money. In fact, there are stories of whole caravans full of wealth making its way through different parts of the world collecting this tax for the temple. So it was a lot of money that poured in to the temple. So I got to thinking, I thought that might be a good idea. What if, but you know, maybe you could have a tax, but then I thought, okay, well, the government does taxes. That's not good. Tax isn't a good word. So then I thought about this. What if we sold season passes to church? Wouldn't that be great? We don't have to take an offering anymore. In fact, all the money we collect, we just give to poor people or the world, and everybody just kind of pays their fee. You know, actually there are churches that do this. And so I asked our business administrator, I said, how much would the season pass be? You know, for a single adult, for a family of four with somebody in Upstreet and, you know, kids stuff. So if you took all the money that we spend at all of our campuses divided by the participants, and we took out broadcast and took out TV and took about a bunch of stuff that you don't really care about, and just kind of the stuff, you know, the buildings, the facilities, the staff, you know, the stuff that we give you, you know, if we just divided it up, how much would a season pass cost to come to one of our churches? It was so much money. I'm not even going to tell you. I mean, I looked at it and I thought, wow. I mean, first of all, you know, we have to have a guess. We can't say, sorry, you didn't buy your season pass, you know, and then we show you how much. It's like, well, I ain't going to do that. Okay. So here's some good news. We are not going to sell season passes. We are going to continue to do it the way we've done it. But here's the cool thing. In the first century, the Apostle Paul actually ran into this same dilemma because the Apostle Paul was planting churches all over the Mediterranean Rim. In fact, let me show you this map and I'll read a passage to you. So here's Jerusalem way over here. You know, here's all these, he started creating churches all around the Mediterranean Rim, all around the Mediterranean Sea, all these churches. But the epicenter of activity for Christianity was Jerusalem. I mean, that's where Jesus lived. That's where the resurrection took place. You know, that's where the apostles, you know, all got together before they started spreading the gospel. And over time, the church in Jerusalem was persecuted, and the church in Jerusalem, the Christians, they couldn't get jobs. They were outcast from society because they didn't fit with the temple system, and they were impoverished. So Paul, as he's planting these churches all around here and teaching them how to collect money to support the churches that they're planting all around the Mediterranean rim, he realized, you know what? These churches that have as much or more than they need to do something for the church in Jerusalem that is in need. And the Christians all around Europe, or what we would call Europe, were very grateful for the Christians in Jerusalem, because Jerusalem is where, I mean, they were there for the, they were the eyewitnesses of the resurrection, and they were the eyewitnesses and the ones that collected the stories of Jesus. So they were grateful for the Christians in the church in Jerusalem, and they were brokenhearted over the plight of Christians that lived in Jerusalem. So the Apostle Paul writes in one of his letters to the church in Corinth how to deal with the whole money collection thing. And I want to read this to you, because here, if you think I'm making all of this up, 2,000 years ago, this is the very first mention. This is the very first, activity as it related to churches collecting money. So here's what he said. And the Apostle Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians chapter 16. It says this: "Now about the collection for the Lord's people." Now I want to write to you about the money part. "Do what I told the Galatian churches to do." So he's writing to a church in Corinth, and he says, look, I'm basically telling everybody the same thing. I'm going to tell you exactly what I told the churches in Galatia to do, probably what he would have told the churches in Rome to do. Here's how the churches should handle this whole money thing. Now, this is interesting. Now, remember, there's no checking accounts. There's no mail. You can't, online. If you have money, you keep it in a hole in, the back room of your house. You may have some people who manage your money if you're super rich. But essentially, you are paid when an actual gold and silver or copper or pieces of coins. They'd split coins in half. They had all kind of different ways they handled currency back there. So here's what he says to these Christians about supporting the church. This is so interesting. He says this: on the first day of the week, which is Sunday, on the first day of the week, of every week, each one of you should set aside a sum of money. In other words, you got to have a plan. Here's the plan. Paul, how should we give? Should we wait and just how the Spirit leads? No. Should we wait and, see how well the guy communicates and inspires us to give? No. You got to have a plan. You got to have a premeditated plan. I want it to be calculated. We'll get to that. And it's going to be designated. So here's what he says. First day, each one of you set aside a sum of money. So every Sunday, he says, when you start in your week, you look at how much money you have, you take some money and you set it aside. You put it in a jar, you put it in an envelope, you put it in a different hole. You got your saving hole, your kids' college fund hole, and then you bury this other, however they did that. So you set it aside. Well, to which we would all ask, well, how much? I mean, how much should we give? And the Apostle Paul, and this is, he started all these churches, so he's the guy. So how much should we give? Listen to what he says. Set aside a sum of money in keeping with your income. Okay, but how much in keeping with your income? I know, you got to be more specific. No, that's it. So is it a percentage? Yeah, it's a percentage. But how much in keeping with your income? Literally, this means to whatever extent one has prospered. That's what this little Greek phrase means. To whatever extent one has prospered, set aside that amount of money. Okay, Paul, you got to give me a number. Paul's, no. How grateful are you for those Christians in Jerusalem? Oh, yeah. How brokenhearted are you over their plight? How grateful are you? How brokenhearted are you? How grateful are you? How brokenhearted are you? So based on how grateful you are and how brokenhearted you are, just set aside a sum of money. How much? I'm not going to tell you. It's in accordance with your income. It's to the degree that you have prospered. This is the New Testament pattern. No amount and no percentage is prescribed. How grateful are you? How brokenhearted are you? He says, set it aside. Then look what happens. Saving it up so that when I come, this is amazing. No collections will have to be made. Now, this is a really powerful idea. No collections will have to be made. Here's what he's saying. When I get there, when I show up, no pressure. You'll have already collected the money. We don't have to have a sad song. I don't have to show you slides of the suffering people in Jerusalem. You've already set aside the money. And you're not going to give leftovers because you've been saving it up over time because you have a plan. And nobody's going to be in church that day going, well, I really wish we could do more. He said, no, this isn't even about me. We're not even going to take a collection when I get there. You are going to have collected it before I get there because you are going to have a plan. You have a premeditated, calculated, designated approach to giving, because that's what generous people do. They don't have to be asked. They don't have to be begged. They don't have to be shown pictures. They have pre-decided. And then he closes this way. Then, when I arrive, I will give letters of introduction to the men you approve. In other words, I'm not going to let you give me this money. You're going to decide who takes this money to Jerusalem. You're not giving it to me. I want to make sure lots of accountability. And send them with your gift to Jerusalem. Okay? So, you got a plan, how much, how often, and then you decide where. And where do you give it? You give it to what, you know, you're grateful for and what breaks your heart. What, you know, you're grateful for in your heart. What breaks your heart? It's that simple. So let me go over it again. You got to have a plan. You've already got one. Might as well come up with one that's a good one, right? You're going to take what's normally at the bottom. You're going to put it at the top. You're going to pick a percentage. You're going to decide when to give it. And then you get the fun part. You say, hey, what am I grateful for and what breaks my heart? So that's what generosity is. It's the premeditated, calculated, designated emancipation of personal financial assets. The easy way to remember this is what you have heard me say 1,000 times. It's give, save, live. Give, save, live. You give first, you save second, and you consume the rest. You give first, you save second, and you consume all the rest. And when you do, everything changes. Because here's the thing. This is the thing. And many of you would, in fact, since I started this series, gotten so many cool emails, so many cool direct messages, texts of people saying, preach it, preach it, preach it. I learned this 5 years ago, learned this 10 years ago, learned this a year ago. It has made such a big difference. And here's what happens. You see, generous people, not people who ran random acts of giving, generous people, people who have ordered their finances around generosity, generous people have an easier time saying no to the things that undermine their own financial future. Generous people have a much easier time saying no to the things that undermine their financial future because they don't think and live like consumers. They live this way. It's the new crazy. It's the crazy where you give and you save and you live and you have peace and you give and you save and you live and you have peace. And people look at this and say, you're crazy. You mean you give before you consume? You give before you save? You give first? That's crazy. Of course it's crazy. But it's a better version of crazy than this. This is when you're living like an owner and you're living like a consumer. This is as if you're living as if, you know what, it isn't really yours anyway because it's all going to be left behind. And just because it comes to you doesn't mean it belongs to you. Generosity, I'm just telling you, generosity is your off-ramp. Generosity is your off-ramp from that kind of crazy. Now, first part of the series, I told you a story about me giving away cars when I was young. So now I want to tell you another story. And if you think I'm bragging, I don't care. I just want you to go, wow, wow. I just want you to try it. Hate me. Don't give any money here. I don't care. I just dare you. Okay. So, 2008, a friend of mine called me and asked me if I'd like to participate in the inaugural activities of our president. I said, yes, of course, you know. Are you going to pay my way to Washington, D.C. yet? And they said, no. I said, okay, we'll come anyway. And so I was invited to be at what's called the National Prayer Service. I've told some of you this story before. National Prayer Service, which is an event that takes place after the day after the inauguration. It's a big church service. And I was asked if I would read a prayer. This is so cool. Read a prayer that has been read at every inauguration since George Washington. Okay, you read this prayer. I'm like, yes. I'm like, Sandra, we're going to Washington, D.C. We're going to be in the National Cathedral. I'm going to be on the stage. We're going to be around all the Supreme Court and the president and the old presidents. And, you know, all it's going to be great. I said, but I got to buy a suit because my suits were old. We're not dress up people. I got to buy a suit. And she said, well, I got to buy a dress. I'm like, yeah. She said, what do you wear to something like this? I'm like, I don't know, but probably we both better step it up, you know. So it took me about a minute to buy a suit, right? I need a dark blue suit with a tie and a white shirt. Ta-da. You know, how long does that take? For Sandra, this became a safari. Which you understand. I mean, this is a big deal. I mean, you know, we're going to meet the president and the old president and the old president's wife and the new president. And, it's just like a big deal. Supreme Court's going to be there. This is a once in a lifetime thing. So she goes on her safari. So it's not working. It's not working. So one day I'm at the office and she told me, she said, today I have to get a dress. I mean, this is a deadline. We're getting close to this. So about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I called her just to see how it was going. And she said, she immediately answered, she said, hey, I found it. And I could hear noise in the background. She goes, I'm at the department store right now. I found it. And she was telling me how beautiful it is. And she was kind of giddy. And she's not normally giddy about that kind of stuff. I said, really? I said, how much is it? Because she was like really giddy. You know, this is really awesome. You know, she said, it's $3,000. I heard the women in the room. The guys are like, yeah. I said, where are you? And she told me, you know, And we don't shop there. I've never even been in there. It's like, people go there. And if you go there, I'm glad you do. I really am. As long as you're generous, you know. Give, save, live, okay? If you got enough to, okay. So here's the first thing that went through my mind. eBay. Okay? So we get home. Because where are you going to wear this again, you know? And you worn ad nauseum, you know, surely we can sell this thing. Then I had a really quick thought, just take it back. But, you know, not going to do that. Didn't really fit. You know, it's not going to do that. Okay. And we don't do stuff like that. And then I heard her laughing on the other end of the phone. She said, don't worry. I said, why? And here's what she said. She said, when I saw the price, she said, all I could think about were those precious faces and New Hope Homes. And New Hope Homes is a group of little tiny houses in Kigali, Rwanda, where we had been the year before. And Sandra and Allie had been sending money to this organization that builds these little tiny houses for children. And they have, you know, group moms and dads. And we'd been to Rwanda and seen that. She said, all I could see were those precious faces in Kigali, Rwanda. And I thought to myself, what could we do with $3,000 there? There's no way I'll spend that much on a dress. So she went to Dillard's. Thank you, Dillard's. Spent $280 on a dress, $75 on a pair of shoes. She looked great. And here's why I'm telling you that story. When you order your life around generosity, it affects everything. Now, here's the thing. I could afford to buy her a $3,000 dress. I never thought I'd be able to say that in my life. We could have spent $3,000 on a dress. Could have justified it as the inauguration. It's my wife. She's raised our three kids. She's fabulous, fantastic. She deserves it, on and on, and I could go. But she immediately saw this dress and that occasion within a broader context. Because just because it comes to us doesn't mean it is for us. I want you to live that way. I want you to at least try to live that way. Look up here and I'm done. You are going to give money away the rest of your life. I want you to learn to live a generous life. And if it sounds crazy, I know it sounds crazy. I know this sounds crazy. But here's what Jesus said. Jesus said, this is crazier. This is crazier because in this way of living, you assume two things that just will devastate you ultimately financially. You're living like an owner and you're living like a consumer. You live like an owner and you live like a consumer, and one is a myth. Ownership is a myth, and consumption and living with the consumption assumption always brings you back to the same place. Empty and wanting more. So you have to choose your crazy. And you can do this the rest of your life if you want. But this is better. This is much, much, much better. And Jesus said, this is what Jesus said. Remember, happy is the person whose life is ordered around giving rather than receiving. Happy. I mean, if it's just all about you, you will be happier if you order your life around giving rather than receiving. Happy. Happy is the person whose life is ordered around giving rather than receiving. Happy is the person that learns to live a generous life. So I want you to go home and I want you to do this. Now, when I say do this, I don't mean you have to do any of it. I do want you to at least write it down. Okay, would you do that? You don't have to do anything different financially, nothing financially. Would you at least go home and say, if I were going to be generous, if I were going to try this, what would my plan look like? What percentage would I like to give away first? What would it look like to give, save, live rather than live, save, give? What would it look like? What percentage? And how, if I was going to do this, how often? And if I was going to do this, where would I like for it to go? At least come up with something that might prompt you to take a step toward living a generous life. You will not regret it. Because it will trickle down into every other area of your finances, and it will trickle down into every other area of your life.